know, the sets were very fantastical, not realistic, but they were still simple. And when it was all over, I thought to myself, this was really good. This was really very good. And the music was, you're absolutely right about Wagner's expanding kind of grandeur, and so subtle and precise at the same time. It's marvelous.
I really agree with everything that you said. The simplicity, thank God, that Jonathan Miller, the director, worked for simplicity. And this is the part that I think belongs to us as actors specifically. In the setting, he would arrange characters, the figures of the people on this great massive boat. And what he did was allow a figure to stand towards the prow of the boat, one figure, another figure seated, and another figure standing. And that simplicity really helped to sustain visual interest in the thing, and yet not take away by trivial action, by small actions. And then downstage he would have the companion and Isolde, and just a deck chair of a sort. And this was all they did, was play in this way. I was very grateful to Jonathan Miller for not filling the piece as Aida the Night Before, which I saw on television, was filled with very naturalistic emotion. I'm going to describe that right now. There is a long passage in the Verdi, the Aida, where you just have orchestral music playing, and here is this poor dope of an actress.
Mirella Freni.
Freni, coming out, having nothing to do. See, now this is what we want to be careful of. She had nothing to do, so what she did was try to feel. She emoted. And as the music was playing, she would go. The poor actress had nothing to build on. You see, it's like, you laughed at me the other day and you said, yes, I teach from the computer. With the computer, if there are no words on the screen, then you can't make the little cursor go into that space. It won't move. It needs words to go. In the same way, emotions need specific either actions or words to build one emotion on top of the other. Even if you're standing still and you're listening to, you're feeling your breath, that's an action, okay? What she did was try to have feelings based on nothing. See, she had nothing to do at that point. They were just filming her at that time. Luckily, what's that? Oh, I see, and she spoke to Doug in the kitchen. Yes, he didn't stay outside too long. Okay. What I want to talk about is two qualities of acting behavior based on what I saw last night. The first act of Tristan. Tristan didn't make a very good impression. Are you aware that his second and third act, the second which was very lyrical, and the third act where he dies, is very pure. He's really very passionate about it. But the first act, the let's call him an actor instead of a singer, he didn't have any sense of presence. He was just there without being a feeling of a noble figure. And that's something that we're all going to have to deal with sometime in our lives, given certain parts that we'll be asked to play. The reason it made sense to me was that years and years ago, when I was at Stanford as a junior artist in residence, I played mostly leading roles, but once they gave me a role in Maxwell Anderson's play called High Tor, nobody even knows of it anymore. You know, it's one of those plays we did in the 40s. And in that play, I was just really just a young girl who was sitting on top of a rock and watching these Dutch, you know, people from an old vanquished ship. It was a role that didn't have any particular strength or didn't have any particular color. It was a function role. And I remember not falling into that trap because the role didn't have anything other than, yes, but when is he coming? You know, that kind of language. I didn't have a clear idea of this character's identity and of her strength. And as a result, I washed out in the play. So this is what I think happened to Tristan in his first act, Saturday night. Without overdoing it, without moving out of the character's space, the space that the character is supposed to inhabit, you must somehow be aware of a certain kind of clarity of intention and clarity of outline. Just being aware of it in an act where you don't have a lot to do. See, Tristan in that act doesn't have a lot to do. He's standing up there. Isolde has the whole act. She says to her companion, call him to me, I want to speak to him. And he comes on for about 3 minutes. Now this is very possible. This could happen to all of us in a play. When he came on in those 3 minutes, there was nothing in his behavior that somehow caught our eye and said, this man is doing nothing, or this character is doing nothing. But even so, I know what he stands for. Okay? And I think that he let that moment go, just as I let it go all those many years ago. Okay? Something for you to just... You'll know. When you come to that kind of a part, you'll know. I don't mean for Tristan to act heroic, you know, like when Charles acts heroic, we say, cut it, no good. It's a way of thinking about the part, and a way of thinking about the part moves into your attitude, and your attitude reads loud and clear. And
that's I have a little observation.
Please.
I mean, Tristan knows that his time is coming. Mm. And at that beginning, I think it's possible that he wants to be kind of
non-identified. Because he doesn't want to give in to his love for her? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think that he doesn't think of himself as a big deal,
mm-hmm.
in a way.
Mm-hmm.
That he's a servant to mm-hmm. Mark, and that this whole thing is to get her to Mark, and mm-hmm. that he just wants to try and be as reserved and inward,
and not
be too expressive with her, you know?
I think that was a necessary comment. It's what I call the power of the pale, or the power of a pale palate. When you have something like that, which is a receding function in a play, you've got to be aware of that receding function and make the pale or the wish to be unidentified so strong that it becomes remarkably interesting to us. See, the negative side of character is as interesting and powerful as the part of yourself that you put forward. And I think that he didn't know how somehow to put that negative power forward. And I think you helped me to explain myself better. Does that interest anybody in the room when I talk about that? It's interesting to me. Okay, but this thing about just being able to think something strongly. So I sound like I'm making a contradiction. You know, I say, in Aida, the feelings, you know, she was mushing her feelings and sort of booting them up to show how deeply Aida feels about the boyfriend, Radames. That won't work. But the power of thought will. The day before, I heard a radio broadcast of Florence Quaver, who is singing the role of a companion. And this is has something to do with character analysis, or really understanding motivation, or understanding the style, and I fault both the singer and the director on this. She said, well, you know, the companion is kind of dumb. I mean, she said, when Isolde says, oh, I have to tell you about someone, and the maid says, who? And then she says, who again? Oh, don't tell me. And I thought, oh, you stupid bitch. I really did. I know she sang well. I thought, here, this will happen to actors also. They will get the role of companion, and they'll forget the sort of ritual size of the play that they're in, or the opera that they're in. In this case, the companion is not dumb. I mean, some of her actions are difficult to reconcile, you know, with logic, but she's not dumb at all. At a certain point in the thing, in the act, she says to Isolde, your mother dealt with magic potions. She has given me this magic potion. So when you analyze character, you can say to yourself, the question, who, is in a sense a ritual question. So you don't take it logically or rationally. It's as though standing beside the mother figure in Ireland, she has gained a certain insight and a certain wisdom. So the companion looking upon Isolde should really be aware of everything that is going on with Isolde's love and Isolde's covering up her love and Isolde's hatred, etc. But when she asks the question, who, it's almost as though she's a guardian figure, you see, being afraid that this thing is going to be spoken, and if it's spoken, it's going to lead to some fateful event in their lives. You see what I mean by a word like who? Don't tell me, and yet you know. This thing comes up. It comes up in Shakespeare. It comes up in the Greeks. It comes up, and we have to be able to hear another voice, not working from logic so much as working from the larger sense of myth.
So you say that it's not enough to just sort of take something and disregard it, that if you're working with a great script or a great work, that you assume that there is something going on,
mm-hmm.
and so it's your responsibility to discover what that is.
It's
going on, as opposed to just saying, well, this doesn't make sense to me, so I'll just
that's right.
throw it out.
You see, this is what I think the director didn't do right, but he should have taught her that, or he should have brought that singer to a larger concept. And the singer has to be able to allow larger concepts, which are not contemporary concepts, into the self. Right? At a point where she does change the potion from a death potion to a love potion, there, if the director doesn't do it for you, then the actor has to do it. You have to, let's say you pick up the death potion that your mistress has asked you to serve both her and Tristan. And in a way, maybe you have to feel behind you a huge figure of a dark figure of fate, meaning that it was not meant to go this way, and that we are all puppets of another life. You see, I'm sort of adding to it, but it's in the opera. I mean, the opera is... So I'm adding to it, but I'm not faking it. It's perfectly real. You feel like behind you, as though some fateful insistence took the death potion and made you change to the love potion, which you then hand to her, and somehow or other you gave in to the gods, and then the rest of the opera takes place. This sort of happens. People do talk about the hands that reach out from the grave, making them, somehow, I don't know why I did it. You know? That happens often. That didn't, do you agree with me, that didn't happen in the opera, and it should have. So it was both the actress's fault for being too quick to say, oh, that's a dumb thing. Brangelina is not very smart. But it was also the director's fault not to guide that moment. On the radio, when I heard her speak, she was saying that. Last night I did hear her, when Isolde says to her something, something, she says, who? And so help me, that who stood out as being flat and prosaic. And I just picked it up, probably because I had heard her talk, you know, the day. Okay. So that's about characterization and about really searching deeply, even though your director doesn't help you, searching deeply for other reasons why you do something that seems illogical. The other thing I wanted to talk about is the quality of line. In a lot of people in acting don't do this at all. When I direct, when I directed Salome, which was by Oscar Wilde, so I'm picking out two pieces, and when I think of my own piece, The Narcissist, what I say is that it's all one speech with different, in Salome, different orchestrations. Okay. So in Salome, I think of, let's say, the violins speaking this part, then it's taken up by the horns, then it's taken up by the other brass, then it's taken up by the cellos. But what I always see is one continual line. In The Narcissist, I say, let's think of it as one voice with very vivid differentiation. So the cues from one speech to another, the third character on stage should be connected to the first character, to the second speech, to the third speech, to the fourth speech. So it's constantly going like this, so that when one emphasizes something like that, the pause involves character two, character three, and character four. Am I making that clear? So that occurred to me last night when, in the last, very last song, which is some of such overpowering beauty, you could just faint, really, you could faint with some of this music. If you've given yourself over to it, let's say, if you've decided, this is my night and it could go on for 6 hours, I don't care, just, you know, just play. I mean, it's very sexual. It's a very sexual experience to go to a Wagner opera. I was busy listening to the music, but my singing teacher had said to me, I was disappointed in her Liebestod, which is the love song at the end, the death love song. And she was right, it was choppy. And I think that we can learn from that, is that there is a way to keep a moving line inside of us through every long speech that we have. Right now I happen to be talking about, you know, classical work, Greek, Shakespeare, whatever, like that. And to, even though your words might break in between, underneath is that ongoing line. And that's what you have to remember. Last night, the Isolde sang, and then somehow she broke, remember I talk about that integrated thing, thought to breath, to word, to action. It's never broken. She broke, would stand up, and then sing another portion of the song. It would stop, and then she would lay herself down to die. What she had done, and probably because she was very tired, and she's really a beautiful singer, probably by the end she was tired, so the mind simply couldn't hold the length of line. But we have to remember that. And these words that I say, they'll come back to you when you're playing a difficult role. You will remember length of line. Oh, I see I'm breaking it. I must stay with it just underneath what it is I'm saying. Does anybody want to throw into that? Speak up.
I hadn't thought of it in those terms, but I was left feeling rather...
That's
somewhere a little cheated by the end.
But yes, that's what happened.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's why it happened, because she broke the line. Okay, so maybe we'll find some exercises if we have time today or next week. And how to keep a line going, but you've got to remember.
I think it's also a question of how does one get through an endurance test like that? Because I think that Isolde has, you know, the terrible responsibility of carrying that opera. I mean, in every act, she carries it pretty much.
Oh, it's fantastic, yeah.
And the fact is that the Liebestod is the thing that everybody waits for.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, but at the same time, she can't sort of give a half of a performance in the first and second acts to sort of let it all hang out for the Liebestod.
Go ahead.
So, no, I was just saying that is...
It's a problem.
It's a problem, and it's something that I think that it's not only came from sort of vocal tiredness, mm-hmm. but I think that physically she just didn't know. I mean, I don't think that she worked very well physically.
Well, let's talk about the shoulders.
But yeah, the whole time I thought she was very tense.
Let's talk about those. But wait, first let me say, I think what this, if you know that the last speech, it really mustn't be a letdown. Really, the last speech is a kind of ecstatic. I mean, if you've been ecstatic through, you know, 3 hours of an, 3.5 hours of an opera, that when you are giving yourself over to death for love, you don't work harder, you just keep the unbroken line in mind. You just know that it's there, and you let your breath move and keep you connected to the piece during your rest periods. See, let's say she has a few measures of a rest period. What she did was, it would be, this is what she did. It would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. See, I broke in between. Watch this. I'm going to use my breath and let it not only give me a rest period, but keep the passion moving. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 6, 7, 8, 9. Did you feel the difference in the word? That was me letting my breath act for me in the places where I was able to rest my voice. And what it does is it brings me my imagination connected to my breath, brings me to larger and ever larger concepts. Concepts that I alone, without breath, could not imagine. Does that make sense? Yeah, I mean, you cannot have ecstasy without breath. And so that at the end, 18, 19, 20, 25, 30, 35. Did you feel the unbroken line? That's what I'm talking about. Okay, let's talk about her shoulders for a minute, since we all caught it. She has a very serious problem. It's a great voice, but the shoulders are like this, and you can tell in the first, I could tell in the first moment. Now, can you see through my dress when I work with shoulders like this? Watch me, I'm going to act my very, very best. I want you to see what I'm going to act galaxy. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Now, I'm going to just let this part of my body, which we think of symbolically as the one part, the soul part, I'm going to leave all of this alone. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Can you see the difference in the
the Lord, and in the giving over to love.
Okay, so that's what we need to do in terms of physical tension, how close that is to acting. I mean, it is acting. That's what we do.
It's scary, too. That way it's very much, much
more vulnerable.
More frightening than
you know what I think that young woman, because she's so famous now and advanced, that she would not be able to sing with this. She'd have to take a year out of her singing life.
She would be able to sing without,
that's right, without it. That's
no,
right.
I really noticed it in her curtain.
Aha, I didn't notice that.
She was extremely stiff.
What's her name?
Jenny Altmaier.
Altmaier. Really great voice, and really a young woman. And yes.
I noticed during the performance too.
Yes. Uh-huh. It's very serious, and we guys have to work. When we're told that there's tension somewhere, you have to get it in right now, in these studies, so that you don't get stuck with it later on, and then can't afford to stop and teach the body and the thought to work together. I had asked for you, Ellen, to bring something to class. Did you bring something?
I did bring a play that we had read before together. We had read it before.
Uh-huh.
Because she gave me the message, and I said, she said that you told me that I was a student, never I was a student, and it gave me such a jolt that I said, oh, you said that.
Okay. This is what I had in mind. I had called Julie, I left a message for you, and I thought, I think we're ready to, let's say, two each week, to bring in and really have people watch and have us actually work on a piece and see what we're doing with it now. I think we've sort of come to that little space. So let's consider yours. I want to take you first, Ellen. Let's say that yours is a cold reading, okay? So we're not judging it on terms of performance or memorized or anything like that. What I want to happen, let's say, why did I call you? Remember lately I've been saying, I'm reeling you out, you know, that you're ready. You are ready. But some of us, you know how we hold back in the past, even though we're actually ready, technically, vocally, physically, everything, to be doing it, something over and beyond the teacher is holding us back. You've got, we all, meaning me too, we've got to cut that line. We've got to cut that line and say, okay, I am ready. I'm just going to assume that I'm ready to pick up a book and read well, you know, like on a first reading. Okay? That's what I want for you. And I don't want any joke. I wouldn't ask you to do it. As a matter of fact, I've been told that I don't move the class on fast enough, right? I'm telling you, I don't want a joke. I want to pick the thing up. Don't care about your audience. Just be intelligent. As though it had nothing to do with acting. Okay? Do it.
Play it again, Sam. It will match the comedy in 3 acts. Play it again, Sam. Act 1, Scene 1. The house lights dim, and you hear the voices of Humphrey Bogart and Mary Astor.
What I want is for you to read a monologue of the girls.
Thank you.
reeling her back in. Does everybody see how unnecessary this is? Ellen, I'm reeling you back in by next week. Okay.
Well, that was divisive on my part because I had to be reeled in because it's more comfortable there. So I purposely go, okay, now totally screw up, Ellen, so that Beatrice will bring you back in. I know I do that.
Good. This is useful. This is useful. It shows everybody else also.
I like to step way back.
Yeah. No, you can't have a trajectory of, I want to be an actress, but don't anybody ask me that. You can't pull against yourself. We have to go in this direction. Every one of us has a kind of opposing trajectory. I have discovered mine, and I'm trying to get my bottom one to go in that direction. You know that this is a young woman who's talking. It's real talk. It's not myth. It's not Isolde. It's not nothing hard. It's just ordinary Diane Keaton kind of talking. It happens to be Neil Simon, but it's Diane Keaton. Mm-hmm. No. Okay. No.
It is Woody Allen.
Yes. Well, I almost got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Huh?
What is that?
Yeah. That's because I also did that Neil Simon.
That I see.
That I read that one with you and I read this one.
I see. Uh-huh.
That's pretty good why I brought it, because we had read this one.
All right. Turn to the first part. And what I want you to do now is, look, I think when we have to do something, when we have to act, when we have to read, and what's the first thing we want to do is just say to ourselves, let's just make sense. Let's read for narrative. Let's see what's going on. Now, like you think, don't think when you pick up the script, I don't want you to think, oh, I've got to show that I can act, or I've got to now be an actress. Don't do that. That paralyzes us. Just pick up and go down through the page and read Laura's lines. Or whatever woman is there, and read it to make sense. And release the lip corner to let those tighten.
I don't want any alimony. You can have everything. I just want out. We've discussed it 50 times. It's no use. I can't stand marriage. I don't find you fun. I feel you suffocate me. I don't feel any rapport with you. I don't dig you physically. For God's sakes, don't take it personally. You like movies because you're one of life's great watchers. I'm not like that. I'm a doer. Participate. I'm gonna laugh. We never laugh together. Things were different.
Good.
You were more aggressive.
Okay. Look, that's a lot better, isn't it? Mm-hmm. That's becoming intelligent and natural. It's natural for anyone in this room to be able to say those lines. All right. So now at least you've got to that point. Mm-hmm. You haven't got a great thing hanging over you saying, oh, I have to show that I do that. Now what I want is for you to uncross your legs. One of the reasons, I want it for two reasons. One is that I know that crossing your legs is a crutch, so you can't do it. But two, she wouldn't have her legs crossed in this particular emotional moment, would she? That's sometimes you want to do that, Julie. You can't do it.
Right.
You have to.
I criticize other people.
That's right.
I do it myself.
Yeah, exactly. Good. So that now you see it. Don't cross your legs. She wouldn't at this point.
Right.
Unless she were being just, you know, drinking. And another thing, she's uh-huh. not doing that. She's really, Woody Allen's women go at the men like this. Like we do.
Well, like I
got yeah, yeah, yeah. All right. Now, go back and remember that he's saying a lot of real things that people suffer from in our contemporary life, right? But he's also saying it so that we do laugh at the same time. He's making us laugh as we recognize ourselves in that. So the actor is a like a selfless figure saying, I'm going to suffer this woman's unhappy marital state, and I'm going to do that in a selfless way so that you can recognize yourselves in it and laugh at it. That's what the actress is doing. Now go and read that again and give us that. So remember, it's a comedy. I want you to stop. Put the thing on your left. No, on your left. Did you notice that when I said do it, that the lip corners went like this? See, these lip corners, when they do that, they're saying, go back to the past. Don't. Undo that little physical gesture, okay? Because that gesture is pulling you back. That physical gesture is pulling you back emotionally to where you were. So just don't do this, and you don't have to think about it. Sometimes. Do it. Just for you, that's a
girl. I don't want any alimony. You can have everything. I just want out. We've discussed it 50 times. It's no use. I don't know. I can't stand the marriage. I don't find you fun. I feel you suffocate me. I don't feel any rapport with you, and I don't dig you physically. For God's sake, don't take it personally.
See how she is beginning to be. See how good an actress she really is, if she would let us know. That's, you begin to see, it's there, Ellen. That's why I keep working with you. It's because your readings are funny and you are wickedy, and it's you who are holding yourself back.
Oh, I know. To the day. That's why I come here. Okay. I like schlepping 45
minutes. No, I understood. But there's a strip that can go just so far, and you have to take that jump off the cliff. You really do. Let's say that when you jump off the cliff, let's take that as an image for everybody.
That's what it feels like, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just remember that there's a lifeline. I mean, that there's a rope around your waist, and that rope is connected to a trunk of a tree and me. And we are here, mm-hmm.
But you're jumping out. It's not that you don't have a rope. Mm-hmm. Now jump. Jump meaning...
Oh, you've got the other end of the rope?
I have the other end of the rope. And the trunk, and the tree trunk. And the two of us. Now go and read that.
Really good. Hand
that's right, and forget the past. Jump off the cliff away from the past.
I want a noodle.
That's all right. You jumped, and it was good. I was about to say to everybody, see how brilliant I am, you know? And then you blew it. Don't. Do it again. Jump off the cliff.
I want a new life. I don't want to go discotheking. I want to go discotheking and skiing and to the beach. I want to drive to Europe on a motorcycle. All we ever do is see movies. You like movies because you're one of life's great watchers. I'm not like that. I am a doer. I want to participate. I want to laugh. We never laughed together. Things were different. You were more aggressive. Goodbye, Ellen. My lawyer will call your lawyer.
Okay.
I have to stop myself.
What?
I don't know.
Look, Ellen, I'm going to talk about the voice in a minute. But it jumped way back. She had no voice, do you see? All right, so this is emotion, and this is past, this is preconceived feelings about yourself as an African.
It just goes like that in that second. It just goes like that. You know, I mean, I feel it inside my stomach, and I feel it.
Yeah.
Afterwards, I can explain it.
Yeah, it's really swell. So you felt it, and you know. Look, you have to say to yourself, gee, I really did jump off the cliff. And that was good, because when I jumped off, I was funny in the reading. I was
really, you know, she was a Diane Keaton already in attitude. It's perfect. You could do that part. Now what we have to do is let you move vocally into the right place. And all that happened was you really have no voice, and you have no voice simply because emotion of the past had, you know, grabbed her right at the throat. Okay? Now we know it. So we've taken the power out of it. So now take one speech again. Go back. Now we're just going to work technically on your vocal technique teacher right now. Go back to the exact speech you just read. The one you just read. About your lawyer, get my lawyer.
Oh, goodbye, Alan. My lawyer, not my lawyer.
Okay, that's where the voice went last year, right? And on the discotheque?
Yeah, I thought it was.
Go on the discotheque.
I want to be last one.
Okay, look, now watch me. Let's do this. I want a new life. Feel what I'm doing in front? Turn the words over to the tongue and keep them right in the front half. I want a new life. I want to go discotheque. Or I don't want to go discotheque. I want a new life. I want to go discotheque. All we do is watch movies. Just do that. Just do it as I do.
I want a new life.
Breathe out. The air comes back. Just feel the word. I want to know.
I want a new life. I want to go discotheque.
Keep it in front.
I want to go skiing.
Good. All you do is watch me.
And the beach.
Alright. All you do is watch me. Breathe and say it.
All you do is watch
me. Don't be so serious. Do you see how she's doing it wrong?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? See, I'm not saying suddenly go lifeless. See, you've got to learn how to work, and you've got to learn how to cope with the little mistakes that you make. I think what's happened is that we all got scared. You got scared, Renata, when you had to make one tiny little sweeping change and your whole life went down the drain.
I know.
Exactly. So what you have to do is say, oh, this is just a technical matter. I know that I grabbed in my throat because I got scared. Period. So now, first practice. I want to get a divorce. I want to go discotheque-ing. I want to go to the beach. All you do is watch movies. Do you see what I'm doing? But I didn't get grim. I didn't say, I've got to work harder. I just said, oh, it's in the wrong place. Now do it. In three sentences.
I want a new life. I want to go discotheque-ing and skiing into the beach. I want to drive to your family. All we ever do is
that's what I want. Did you notice that everything was out front, really? Now what I want you to do is to take that and let the least little bit of character move into the right placing of the sentences. Tell him. But keep your mind a little bit on front, not too much, because as you know, Charles, if you do it too much, you blow it. You then overdo it in another way. So what I'm teaching you now is to work lightly, lightly. Everything is lightness. Try it now.
I want a new life. I want to go discotheque-ing and skiing into the beach. I want to drive to Europe on a motorcycle. All we ever do is go to movies.
That's the idea. Did you notice that she had a little bit of color and the words were in front, and we're getting there. Now, because it's somewhat right, let yourself fly a little bit. Trust that it's going to be there, that you've licked that little grab, which was from the past. May not even ever happen again. Now, really tell him what you want.
Act.
Live. Fly. Don't breathe out.
No.
No.
I did that so that I wouldn't grip.
Now you're reeling out. What I want you to do is, the breathing out the time before was okay because it was still technical. Now see whether you can just do it. If you can't, go back to the breathing out. Now go for it. Let the air come in through the torso to the root.
I want a new life. I want to go discotheque-ing and skiing and to the beach. I want to drive through Europe on a motorcycle. All we ever do is see the movies.
Okay.
You almost had it, didn't you? Up to, all we ever do is see a movie, and then, so you could manage it.
I had it enough to know that I cheated myself, not you.
Right. Now you, the actress, you have to recognize that, oh yes, my mind was able to stay free for 3 sentences. Now I have to add that other sentence. It's like Isolde. You have to stay underneath it and just say, oh, I have to just know that it must go on for the whole speech, which is 8 sentences. That's all you think. It's very ordinary thinking. Okay? So let's work ordinary. One thing you've got to be aware of is that as you worked vocally here, the body was still not ready to give up, so the elbow began to twitch. You've got to feel that in yourself, because then you have to say, okay, now I have to do it again, and not let the fear show up in my elbow. All right? Because it was beginning to work for him. All right? Don't let that happen. So be completely empty and say your lines. Then when you know that your body isn't paying a price for it, either here or in the elbow or in a little twitch of the fingers, when you know that's not happening, then go to character and let character fill in the body with, and I want to do this and I want to do that. But that's the character moving. It's not one of us twitching. All right? Try it once more. This time you can breathe out to empty your body of a price that it wishes to pay.
I want a new life. I want to go discotheking and ski and the beach. I want to drive through Europe on a motorcycle. All we ever do is see movies.
Yes, you do. Okay.
I don't know why that last line, she changes, so...
Forget it. It's that you weren't able to sustain that sense of freedom.
Yeah.
That's all it is. Mm-hmm. So what you have to do is say to yourself, well, my teacher, imagine me teaching somebody surfing.
So it's like, I can't sustain it, so some junk comes to climb again.
That, exactly. Yeah, that's all it is. Like, so what you have to do is go home and say, gee, you know, I really know what it feels like, and I'm either going to go to sleep tonight and tell myself that emotional junk, that those stupid memories, I don't need them anymore, and now I'm just going to get rid of them. That's all it is. Because you notice that the breath comes suddenly, she can't breathe, and the last sentence is very shaky. All right?
Is one technique to start with that line? I mean...
Yeah, why not? Why not take that line and go like this? All we ever do is do the movies, see, and really get that there. And then when you feel good with that line, go then to the whole thing. It's a perfect suggestion. Perfect. So that's what I would do. I would work on that. What do you feel that you've gotten from today? Not the negative, but the positive. Have you learned anything? Are you convinced of anything?
Oh, well, it's hard to explain, but there's certain... From the first reading that I did to the last reading, there's a series of a zillion little steps, and I bypassed certain ones. I didn't know how far I was like.
Good.
But I
you did.
That I went to a certain point.
And you can do it again, and you feel that you know how.
I mean, but it doesn't satisfy me.
I'm not asking for that. I'm not asking for that. Don't give me that.
Okay.
Just what I asked for.
Did
you notice how large and powerful Ellen's voice is when she has a voice? Okay, so you don't need voice. Nobody even needs acting lessons. You're also good if we were to get rid of these little memories. Okay, enough for today. That's good. You do have it. You're on the way out. And even the fear that showed up was useful because she got rid. What's the matter? Why are you laughing? Mm-hmm. No? What, tell?
No, I'm going to yell at me.
Better say it. Now I'm dying to know.
No, because I made a little face because it was my turn.
Oh! That's true. It's Julie's turn. Okay. I dare her not to be a good actress. Uh-oh. All right,
now I'm going to make it hard for her. Oh, and Julie's so good, and Julie knows how, and Julie will show everybody. Let's build it up so that she dies, right? Good, and now right. Do it.
Die, yeah. Julie.
Can I sit down, or what? I don't know. Should I stand up?
No, stand up. You are ready for that. Don't give me any of that. See, Ellen could sit, you know, just as long as she doesn't cross her legs. That's enough for Ellen.
Okay, I'm doing another section of this incredibly long monologue called The Woman Alone. I've just gotten off the phone with my husband, and he's yelled at me on the phone. He says when he gets home, he's going to smash my face in. My husband hit me all the time. Sometimes the way he punches me, he thinks he was beating up another man. Come to think of it, that's one way I do get equal rights. But he says he only does it because he loves me so much. He says I'm still just a baby and he has to protect me. From everybody but himself. He protects me by locking me up like a battery hen, and then he beats me up, and then he wants to make love. Doesn't care if I don't feel like it. Always ready, that's me, instant like Nescafe. Washed, brushed, deodorized, shaved armpits and legs, all smooth, warm, and eager, and silent. All I do is just lie there and breathe. Oh, and give a few little squeals and sighs every now and then till I think everything's fine. Well, let me tell you, everything is far from fine between my husband and me. With my husband, I have never had a word. What an awful word. I can't bear to say it even. Orgasm. Sounds like some kind of a hideous creature, like a cross between an orangutan and a cataclysm. Well, I can just see it now. Fully grown orgasm escapes from American Circus, or, none at zoo attacked by crazed orgasm. And whenever they talk about reaching orgasm, all I can see is somebody running like mad to catch a bus. Good, I'm glad you think it's funny too. Orgasm, like some kind of a boogeyman to scare the children. Why didn't they use a nice sensible word? Like chair, for instance. Then you could say, I reached a chair. Well, then at least you could rest. I'll stop there. There's more. I could go on for hours, but...
Okay, sit. Okay, Julie, this we got to lick. We got to lick it today. You know, like, okay, Ellen, this is it. This is it for today. Mm-hmm. You, it's funny, Julie is so, really such a good actress that you can actually make this thing sound like she means it, but you don't mean it. Mm-hmm. You can go, and he said this, and I went for that, and the chair, and the bus. You don't mean it. Mm-hmm. You've got to mean it. And you've got to, and it's a habit you have fallen into in the last years. The meaning of the word doesn't go, express it this way. It's as though you're going 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And what it has to do is that meaning has to drop down into the body, and you're not taking the time. So I'm gonna drop that meaning down into my body. I do it with my breath. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Did you feel the movement of the breath as it took me to the next sentence? And do that again.
Watch this.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I'm working from down in here. So it plus meaning come together in what I say. You are on the surface of what you're saying. You cannot work that way any longer, because it puts you in the group of Hollywood actresses who
are making no sense at all and have no right to be on the stage. You can do it. It's just a bad habit you've gotten into. Get up now and begin. And don't care what shape it takes, I'll worry about that. Start from the beginning.
He says when he gets home, he's going to smash my face in.
What?
My husband hit me all the time.
Me, Matt, a little bit more. Do you feel that he's getting it now? Okay, now when you say what, my husband hit. What? Listen, I'm going to do it for you, to the hell with it. What? My husband hit me? Did my husband hit me? I mean it when I say hit me. You don't mean it. And when you say what? All the time. I mean it. And my body means the word. Your body has to mean what you say. Say it. Do it.
He says when he gets home, he's going to smash my face in.
What?
My husband hit me all the time. Sometimes the way he punches me, you think he was beating up another man. Well, come to think of it, that's one way I do get equal rights.
All right, stop. Okay. Now, first, the gesture is lousy. Yeah. It's hard. The gesturing is really hard. And secondly, that line is very hard to deliver. One, in the lines that Ellen had in the Woody Allen play, they were all perfectly written. You know, they were sayable. This line is there for a laugh. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the actor really has to figure out, how do I say it for the laugh and yet stay in character? It's really speaking some of those smart
lines. That line.
No, I want you to work on it. What's the line now?
Sometimes the way he punches me and think he was beating up another man. Come to think of it, that's one way I do get equal rights.
Uh-huh. This is what I would do. We know that the author is a feminist.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So equal rights, I would take that word equal rights and make something more of it. I would lift that up because that's what all we women want, right? Mm-hmm. So do you see how I'm going to... what's the sentence?
Sometimes the way he punches me, you think he was beating up another man. Come to think of it, that's one way I do get equal rights.
Okay. So there I would come out of the story and address the other women in the mm-hmm. audience. Come to think of it, that's the way I get equal rights. You feel how that felt easier to say? Mm-hmm. So it's a question like we were doing at the beginning of the hour of interpretation. You have to learn how to interpret a speech like what you're doing, the monologue.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you address the audience, come to think of it,
that's one way I do get equal rights.
Come to think of it, that's the way I do get equal rights. You feel that takes care of the awkward gesture. Try that, Judy, in your own way.
Sometimes, the way he hits me, you think he was beating up another man. Come to think of it, that's one way I do get equal rights. But he says,
but you know what? You know what I mean to Julie? I'm nice to Ellen, but I'm mean to Julie, right? Julie, darling, when you looked out at the people listening to you, you did not see them and you didn't really tell them. So I'm catching you now on what happened is that the fading, you sort of faded away from reality mm-hmm. in the last couple of years. Now get real. Mm-hmm. Tell these people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Do it again.
Sometimes the way he hits me, you think he was beating up another man. Come to think of it, that's one way I do get equal rights. But he says he only does it.
Did you feel the difference? Yeah. Did you feel the strength that gives you? Did you feel it too? Mm-hmm. Okay, so Julie is now beginning to mean everything she says. Keep going.
But he says he only does it because he loves me so much. He says I'm still just a baby and he has to protect me from everybody but himself.
All right, now, it is. Once again, the lines are awkward in my speech. So let's go back to, he says, Henry does it. See, there I would find a stronger attitude. Let's say it would be, and don't mind if I, you know, do it once. He says, he only does it because he loves me so much. He says, I have to be true.
Did you see that?
Just giving it color helped me to say those two. He says, what you're doing is all of your sentences are the same. This is why you have to have variety. Okay? Remember we talked about that the two lessons ago. They all ended in the same way. Now I'm talking technically oral reading. Your own ear should reject when every ending is the same and every sentence begins on the same pitch, this pitch, that pitch. It makes everything endlessly verbose, okay? So you either, like your body should feel, oh gee, everything's the same, but your mind can adopt different strategies. It can adopt confidence, he says, and you know what else he says? He says, I'm a baby, so you're doing both. The body is rejecting monotony of reading, the monotony of pitch, and flatness of sentence. But the mind is finding interpretation, varying interpretations. Go ahead.
But he says he only does it because he loves me so much. He says, I'm still just a baby, and he has to protect me from everybody but himself. Well, he protects me by locking me up like a battery hen. And then he beats me up, and then he wants to make love. Couldn't care less if I don't feel like it.
That, you feel how real that is? Mm-hmm. How that engages us, and it engages you. Do you notice how Ellen and Julie really are good actresses? And it's now beginning to show. Do you feel it?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
What I want you to do now is use movement, back and forth. You know, kind of go to her, and then go back to her, and then like this, and then like that. You can include it.
And then he wants to make love. Couldn't care less if I don't feel like it. Always ready, that's me. Instant, like Nescafe. Washed.
Okay, brush. The instant like Nescafe isn't funny. I mean, it's a stupid kind of line. Anyway, my screenwriting teacher can tell you that, right? It's not that all that hot a line. But we're stuck with it. So I would toss it off knowing that it's a stupid line. Sometimes when you toss off a stupid line knowing that it is, it's funny. And we laugh. Instant. Like Nesta. That way it takes care of it. But did you notice how I lifted it? So I'm talking about technically and interpretation.
Always ready. That's me. Instant like Nescafe. Washed, brushed, deodorized, shaved armpits and legs, all warm.
Okay, that's not funny enough.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know it.
You know, I was working on this whole thing, just memorizing, and then I got to this section, I thought, I had this, like, huge reluctance with this little section. Right. And now I know why, I don't really like this section.
Yes, <you're not. laughs>